The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
European leaders, including Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky, will meet virtually with US President Donald Trump today, ahead of Trump's meeting with Vladimir Putin in Alaska on Friday. The leaders hope it'll be a European counterweight to that meeting, with concern among them that an agreement could be reached between Putin and Trump without Europe or Ukraine at the table. But if that were to happen, would Europe be strong enough to reject a Trump-Putin deal? Joining us now, Scott Lucas, professor and political analyst at the Clinton Institute at UCD. Scott, good morning.
Very good morning to you, Pat.
Now, the auspices for this are not great, really, because Caroline Leavitt has described this as a listening exercise rather than a negotiation.
In a strange way, Pat, that may actually be good news. If you allow me to explain, the concern has been that Donald Trump, who only a week ago was threatening toughened sanctions on Russia and its trading partners, but then got this like photo opportunity with Putin, the concern is he would be flipped on Friday and that Russia would be able to get him to accept their ultimatum on Ukraine, including the demand that Russia seize 20% of Ukraine's territory and have it legally recognized. Now, Leavitt's statement, as far as you can trust that from her, indicates that Trump would make no commitment on Friday. He's just there to listen. He's not there to come out at a press conference with Vlad and say, yeah, that's right, Russia gets parts of Ukraine. We're lifting sanctions on Moscow. Ukraine's kept weak and demilitarized.
The question of Trump and Putin together, I mean, they did have a private meeting without anyone else present during the Helsinki meeting in his first term, which was a shameful affair because he disavowed his own intelligence people and favoured the views of Vladimir Putin. So there are fears we'd have the same show again because the Russians have some sort of compromat on Trump.
I mean, I don't want to go into the compromise in terms of...
But if it's real, I mean, whatever form it takes, it could be sexual compromise, it could be financial compromise, it could be anything. But the point is, if it exists, he is in thrall to Putin.
I don't think you have to go to the compromise, Pat, is what I'm saying. I think you can go back to the fact that Donald Trump has had links with the Soviet and then the Russian elite going back to when he was a real estate developer in New York in the 1980s, and that Trump is a longtime admirer of Putin. I think what is, that worry specifically from the first term is that on several occasions he was alone in a room with Putin with only the translators, and that he subsequently told the U.S. translator, don't circulate a record of the meeting. So in other words, the Kremlin, basically pushed their narrative on him. And we saw that when he went as far as renouncing his own intelligence services. Now, that's why not only U.S. officials, but Ukraine and Europe, working with those officials, have been preparing for Friday, which is how can they forestall Trump getting into that position one-on-one privately where Putin spends him? I pay really careful attention, Pat, to who else goes up to Alaska. Will J.D. Vance be there? Will the American envoy to Ukraine, Keith Kellogg, who is very strong at not wanting to be in the Kremlin's pocket, be there? Will Marco Rubio be there? And will they be in the meetings with Trump so that he doesn't slip the leash?
I mean, it is incredible that this is what they have to do, to send some sort of sentries to watch their own man rather than watch the other guy.
Yeah, well, that, welcome to Trump world. And we've been there, now for almost more than 4.5 years, if you take the first term plus where we are. And that's just simply the reality that a coherent U.S. foreign policy, one that's based on a sensible appreciation both of your alliances and your adversaries, that's out the window. Donald Trump's foreign policy is a personal foreign policy. It's first and foremost on what Donald Trump feels. And in recent weeks, he has felt like Vladimir Putin has let him down. And then, of course, most of all, it's what Donald Trump thinks he can get out of something. And in this case, first and foremost, it's the idea that he could be, quote, a peacemaker and get the Nobel Peace Prize, even if that means parroting Russia's terms.
But there's no question. I mean, if anyone would talk to him and speak sense to him, they would say to him, listen, appeasement doesn't get you the Peace Prize.
Well, yeah, I mean, but then you've got to talk sense in terms of getting into detail in terms of Ukrainian and European security. And again, at the risk of angering a few people who I know listen to us because they're big Trump supporters, he has no understanding of Ukraine. He has no understanding of what's happening on the battlefield. He has no understanding of the economic and political dimensions. And he really has no understanding of European security. And so that means you can say, look, you know, if you let Russia, you know, annex 20% of Ukrainian territory, something that Vladimir Zelensky warned about last night, Russia will set this up to launch a further invasion. They will attack again. And if you let them have 20% of Ukrainian territory, and if you lift the sanctions on them, they will put further pressure on other areas of Europe through what we call hybrid warfare, economic measures, disinformation measures, sabotage measures as well, starting with the Baltic states, starting with Poland, probably as, you know, those states that are after Ukraine closest to Russia. You know, that's what we've been seeing for years with Putin. But the Kremlin's line, and they'll spin this with Trump, is we're the victims here. Oh, it was NATO that attacked us. Oh, it was the Biden administration that attacked us, the evil Biden administration. Can they get away with it yet again?
Now, it seems as if Russia can literally do anything. I mean, there are charges now that they may have hacked into one of America's senior courts, that the Russians are behind this. And even if Trump is told this, that the Russians are, you know, acting in a malign fashion towards America on so many levels, that he still wants to do business with this man.
Yeah, the problem's not just Trump, though, Pat. Now, first of all, there are some officials in the Trump administration who are eyes open in terms of what Russia has done and will do. But the problem is that other Trump officials, his political appointees, are there to protect Trump. And in part of protecting Trump is to bury Russia's record in terms of what it's done for almost a decade. In recent weeks, for example, we have seen the spreading of the fake Obama-Clinton hoax that supposedly made up all these stories about Trump's cooperation with Russia, something that was fronted by the Director of National Intelligence, Tulsi Gabbard, who has pushed Kremlin lines for a long time. Now, that was absolute rubbish, and I can walk you through those documents and how they didn't say anything of the sort. And I can walk you through the fact that, yes, Russia did cooperate with Trump in the 2016 campaign and that it's continued to try to interfere, for example, with cyber operations since then. But Tulsi Gabbard is not there to present an assessment of what is really happening. She's there to protect Trump. Similarly, the Justice Department under Pam Bondi is there not to carry out investigations of crimes, including by Russians inside the United States. They're there to protect Trump. So we've got a wider problem beyond Ukraine, which is that, you know, Donald Trump was compromised by the Russians. Now, the reasons how he was compromised, I'll buy you a couple of beers, we'll talk about it. But he was compromised from the time that he went into office and he tried to cover up his cooperation with the Russians. And that's still a vulnerability for the U.S. system.
Now, what happens if Trump and Putin agree a deal without the presence of Vladimir Zelensky? I mean, what does Europe do then? Because they do have sequestered assets of Russia, a huge amount of money, which presumably could be seized.
Yeah, they can't agree a deal. That's the first thing, Pat. Now, Trump and Putin can come out and say, this is what we want to happen. And Trump can parrot Putin's lines. But the fact here is you cannot establish a resolution to end Russia's invasion unless Ukraine's at the table. And indeed, if Ukraine's at the table, then you mean Europeans at the table. You can't force this on Ukraine. Now, and we have been here in the first 6 months of Trump's administration. Can Europe continue to support Ukraine financially, politically, and militarily if Trump goes walkabout or even further says, that's it, no American military aid to Ukraine, no financial aid to Ukraine, I'm cutting them off completely? Well, Europe has done that. They have stepped up the commitment for investment in defense, including production inside Ukraine. They've stepped up the financial support for Ukraine. They are proceeding with the accession process for Ukraine to join the European Union. They are proceeding with further sanctions on Russia. And using the profits from the frozen Russian assets to support Ukraine. They can do all of this, and other countries in the international community are also providing support. Will it be more difficult if Trump becomes Putin's buddy again, and we're back in the position of the spring where the Americans effectively abandoned Kyiv? Yeah, it'll be more difficult. Is it impossible? No, Ukraine still stands.
Can you talk me through the mind of MAGA in the sense that people who will support this man cavorting with Putin, or are they so ignorant of foreign affairs and the international picture they only care about, the grocery bill in Walmart or whatever it might be? Are they so insulated that they don't care whether or not their leader consorts with a man who clearly is the enemy?
I mean, there's some figures in MAGA who are in Putin's pocket. You know, if you think about the polemicist Tucker Carlson, you know, he's been out there and, you know, basically been lavished with praise from Moscow in a sit down with Putin. There have been others like Steve Bannon, the figure on the far right, who has cavorted with, you know, not just Putin, but with people like Viktor Orban in Hungary. But there's a wider issue here, Pat, in which there's a sort of a destructive narrative, which is that all of this is America's fault. It's the fault of an American foreign policy from the Cold War to now, and in terms of American intervention. Now, I have been very critical of American foreign policy in the Cold War, and I can walk you to it on a case-by-case basis. And the well was poisoned when America launched that disastrous and deadly invasion of Iraq in 2003. But what's happened since then, it's not only figures on the right who stand against America actually being responsible and being involved with others in defending countries who are attacked. It's also figures on the so-called left. You know, I can give you a whole series of names who will respond to us, who'll say, you know, defending Ukraine is defense of NATO, or sorry, expanding NATO's and America's ambitions to crush Russia. We've got that horseshoe effect from both the left and the right, which does not see the fundamental, which is that the post-war international order since 1945, as flawed as it has been threatened and indeed almost broken by a combination of Vladimir Putin's aggression and by the chaos of Trump in the White House.
Now, everyone wants to move towards some sort of a peace deal. The question is Trump, although he should never have spoken this aloud, is he right in the sense that concessions on territory, whether they be permanent or temporary, will be involved in whatever peace deal there is, or ceasefire, extended ceasefire deal? Is he right about that? Although, as in every other way, he shows his hand before going in and therefore weakens it.
Yeah, I mean, that's where Zelensky and Europe are right now, Pat. Although, Pat, again, Trump's got no clue. He's used this incorrect phrase, swapping of territory. And Zelensky, in the past 24 hours, has put this out publicly. And that is that a ceasefire on the current front lines, and that means that Russia holds the territory which it occupies in the short term. And again, that's Crimea, which it illegally took in 2014. That's parts of two regions in the east. It's parts of two regions in the south. What Zelensky and Europe are saying is you cannot strike a deal in which Russia is allowed to take more territory that it does not currently hold. And that is true in the Donetsk region in the east and in the Kherson and Zaporizhia regions in the south, and you do not legally recognize Russia's occupation. Those are the red lines that you set down. And you get to a point, Pat, where, again, the rough parallel is Germany during the Cold War. And that is, you know, there had to be an acceptance that Germany was divided and that East Germany was in the Soviet sphere, as it was for 40 years. You weren't going to push the Soviets out of there. But in the meantime, you built up the rest of Germany. You built up West Germany. It became a founding member of the EEC, which is now the European Union. It became a member of NATO. It became one of the leading technological and industrial powers in the world. That's what you do with Ukraine as well. And indeed, that process has already started, even as they are fighting this war to maintain their sovereignty and independence.
One text here from Pat in Dublin. Is the meeting with Trump and Putin in Alaska and the clampdown in Washington, D.C. more diversionary tactics to escape the pressure that Trump was under from the horrors of the war in Israel and the Epstein scandal? And sadly, these tactics seem to have worked again.
I don't think that's the fundamental of why Trump is you know, going to see Putin in Alaska. Trump has always wanted a photo opportunity with Putin, and the Kremlin have just finally played their last card. They were holding out against that until they were threatened with the toughened sanctions. I do think that Trump wants to pose as almost as an authoritarian who controls the military. He doesn't believe that cities and states should run their own governments. That's why Washington's happening. But I do agree with Pat in the extent that Trump is always trying to change the news cycle. He's always coming out with a new statement, a new action, which is outrageous, which is unconstitutional, which is illegal. And in the process, then you get other serious issues. You know, more than 60,000 Gazans who are dead, Israel planning for a long-term occupation of it, the U.S. supporting all of that. And those slip down the agenda. And it also, at least for, you know, a short period of time, knocks Epstein down the front pages and to the back. Although I don't think he's going to escape that one. That one, he can create a diversionary story every day of the week. And unless he releases those Epstein files, that's going to haunt him, including with his own supporters.
Scott Lucas, professor and political analyst at the Clinton Institute at UCD. Thank you very much, Scott.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.